Welcome back to the Violet Strange Mystery Series, The Intangible Clue, Part 2. I gave the order to Madame Perrault on Fifth Avenue. How came my things to be found in the house of this woman of whose horrible death we have been talking? Did you suppose that Madame Perrault did such work with her own hands, or even had it done in her own establishment? Mrs. Doolittle was universally employed. She worked for a dozen firms. You will find the biggest names on most of her packages. But on this one, I allude to the one addressed to you, there was more to be seen than the name. These words were written on it in another hand. Send without opening. This struck the police as suspicious, sufficiently so at least for them to desire your presence at the house as soon as you make it convenient. To open the box. Exactly. The curl of Miss Strange's disdainful lip was a sight to see. You wrote those words yourself, she coolly observed. While someone's back was turned, you whipped out your pencil and resorted to a very pardonable subterfuge, highly conducive to the public's good. But never mind that. Will you go? I suppose I must, she grudgingly conceded. However obtained, a summons from the police cannot be ignored even by Peter Strange's daughter. Another man might have displayed his triumph by smile or gesture, but this one had learned his role too well. He simply said, Very good. Shall it be at once? I have a taxi at the door. But she failed to see the necessity of any such hurry. With sudden dignity, she replied, That won't do. If I go to this house, it must be under suitable conditions. I shall have to ask my brother to accompany me. Your brother? Oh, he's safe. He knows. Your brother knows? Her visitor, with less control than usual, betrayed very openly his uneasiness. He does, and approves. But that's not what interests us now, only so far as it makes it possible for me to go with propriety to that dreadful house. A formal bow from the other, and the words, They may expect you then. Can you say when? Within the next hour. But it will be a useless concession on my part, she pettishly complained. A place that has been gone over by a dozen detectives is apt to be brushed clean of its cobwebs, even if such ever existed. That's the difficulty, he acknowledged, and did not dare to add another word. She was at this particular moment so very much the great lady, and so little his confidential agent. He might have been less impressed, however, by this sudden assumption of manner, had he been so fortunate as to have seen how she employed the 3/4 of an hour's delay for which she had asked. She read those neglected newspapers, especially the one containing the following highly colored narration of this ghastly crime. A door ajar, an empty hall, a line of sinister-looking blotches marking a guilty step diagonally across the flagging, silence, and an unmistakable odor repugnant to all humanity. Such were the indications which met the eyes of Officer O'Leary on his first round last night, and led to the discovery of a murder which will long fill the city by its mystery and horror. Both the house and the victim are well known. Here followed a description of the same and of Mrs. Doolittle's manner of life in her ancient home, which Violet hurriedly passed over to come to the following. As far as one can judge from appearances, the crime happened in this wise. Mrs. Doolittle had been in her kitchen, as the tea kettle found singing on the stove goes to prove, and was coming back through her bedroom when the wretch, who had stolen in by the front door, which, to save steps, she was unfortunately in the habit of leaving on the latch till all possibility of customers for the day was over, sprang upon her from behind and dealt her a swinging blow with the poker he had caught up from the hearthstone. Whether the struggle which ensued followed immediately upon this first attack, or came later, it will take medical experts to determine. But whenever it did occur, the fierceness of his character is shown by the grip taken upon her throat and the traces of blood which are to be seen all over the house. If the wretch had lugged her into her workroom, and thence to the kitchen, and thence back to the spot of the first assault, the evidences could not have been more ghastly. Bits of her clothing, torn off by a ruthless hand, lay scattered all over these floors. In her bedroom, where she finally breathed her last, there could be seen mingled with these a number of large but worthless glass beads. and close against one of the baseboards, the string which had held them, as shown by the few remaining beads still clinging to it. If, in pulling the string from her neck, he had hoped to light upon some valuable booty, his fury and his disappointment is evident. You can almost see the frenzy with which he flung the would-be necklace at the wall and kicked about and stamped upon its rapidly rolling beads. Booty! That was what he was after, to find and carry away the poor needlewoman's supposed hoardings. If the scene baffles description, if, as some believe, he dragged her yet living from spot to spot, demanding information as to her places of concealment, under threat of repeated blows, and finally baffled, dealt the finishing stroke, and proceeded on the search alone, no greater devastation could have taken place in this poor woman's house or effects. Yet, such was his precaution and care for himself that he left no fingerprint behind him, nor any other token which could lead to personal identification. Even though his footsteps could be traced in much the order I have mentioned, they were of so indeterminate and shapeless a character as to convey very little to the intelligence of the investigator. That these smears, they could not be called footprints, not only crossed the hall, but appeared in more than one place on the staircase, proves that he did not confine his search to the lower story. And perhaps one of the most interesting features of the case lies in the indications given by these marks of the raging course he took through these upper rooms. As the accompanying diagram will show, we omit the diagram, he went first into the large front chamber, thence to the rear where we find two rooms, one unfinished and filled with accumulated stuff, most of which he left lying loose upon the floor, and the other plastered, and containing a window opening upon an alleyway at the side, but empty of all furniture and without even a carpet on the bare boards. Why he should have entered the latter place, and why, having entered, he should have crossed to the window, will be plain to those who have studied the conditions. The front chamber windows were tightly shuttered. The attic ones, cumbered with boxes and shielded from approach by old bureaus and discarded chairs. This one only was free, and although darkened by the proximity of the house neighboring it across the alley, was the only spot on the story where sufficient light could be had at this late hour for the examination of any object of whose value he was doubtful. That he had come across such an object and brought it to this window for some such purpose is very satisfactorily demonstrated by the discovery of a worn-out wallet of ancient make lying on the floor directly in front of this window, a proof of his cupidity, but also proof of his ill luck. For this wallet, when lifted and opened, was found to contain 200 or more dollars in old bills, which, if not the full hoard of their industrious owner, was certainly worth taking by the one who had risked his neck for the sole purpose of theft. This wallet, and the flight of the murderer without it, give to this affair, otherwise simply brutal, a dramatic interest, which will be appreciated not only by the very able detectives already hot upon the chase, but by all other inquiring minds anxious to solve a mystery of which so estimable a woman has been the unfortunate victim. A problem is presented to the police. There Violet stopped. When not long after, the superb limousine of Peter Strange stopped before the little house in 17th Street, it caused a veritable sensation, not only in the curiosity mongers lingering on the sidewalk, but to the two persons within, the officer on guard and a belated reporter. Though dressed in her plainest suit, Violet Strange looked much too fashionable and far too young and thoughtless to be observed without emotion entering the scene of a hideous and brutal crime. Even the young man who accompanied her promised to bring a most incongruous element into this atmosphere of guilt and horror, and, as the detective on guard whispered to the man beside him, might have much better been left behind in the car. But Violet was great for the proprieties, and young Arthur followed her in. Her entrance was a coup de théâtre. She had lifted her veil in crossing the sidewalk, and her interesting features and gentle air of timidity were very fetching. As the man, holding the door, noted the impression made upon his companion, he muttered with sly facetiousness, You'll think you'll show her nothing, but I'm ready to bet a fiver that she'll want to see it all and that you'll show it to her." The detective's grin was expressive, notwithstanding the shrug with which he tried to carry it off. "And Violet?" The hall into which she now stepped from the most livid sunlight had never been considered, even in its palmiest days, as possessing cheer even of the stately kind. The ghastly green light infused through it by the colored glass on either side of the doorway seemed to promise yet more dismal things beyond. "Must I go in there?" she asked, pointing, with an admirable simulation of nervous excitement, to a half-shut door at her left. "Is there where it happened? Arthur, do you suppose that there is where it happened?"
"No, no, miss," the officer made haste to assure her. "If you are Miss Strange..."
Violet bowed.
"I need hardly say that the woman was struck in her bedroom. The door beside you leads into the parlor, or as she would have called it, her workroom. You needn't be afraid of going in there. You will see nothing but the disorder of her boxes. They were pretty well pulled about. Not all of them, though," he added, watching her as closely as the dim light permitted.
"There is one which gives no sign of having been tampered with. It was done up in wrapping paper and is addressed to you, which in itself would not have seemed worthy of our attention had not these lines been scribbled on it in a man's handwriting. Send without opening." And that's it for today. We'll be back again in a week with the next episode. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at Audio Mystery Time, cap A, Audio, cap M, Mystery, cap T, T-Y-M, Time. And we're also on Facebook. You can visit our Facebook page, Positive Affirmations and Audio Stories. See you next week.